Okay, reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Panchalila 1, 123. Okay, sign the page. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vayakahi Kongranta Kalihe Nadani. Dharapatare Shadantara Kani. Ramananda Roy inquired, what kind of drama are you writing? We can understand that it is a line of conclusive statements. Oh, it's wrong verse, excuse me. Oh, it is. Wait a second. Wait. Okay, it is. Sometimes it's hard to find the part because it's completely. Only get it, Timanandasya. Gananjana Shalakaya. Taksu and Mulatam Yena. Vasai Su Gurave Namaha. Sita Kanya Mano Bhushtan. Apitaviena Bhutale. Sayam Rupa Tadamayam. Tadati Sapadantikam. Panchakalpa Tarubhyashta Kripashindo Vayevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. As those of you know, I kind of, sometimes before the class, tell a little bit what I've been doing. I think the last class I gave was on the road, and one of the reasons I was on the road is that my brother's, my elder brother's wife, was in her last days, and I wanted to go pay respect, so I left the place in Richmond, Virginia, a little bit early. And then she passed away on Monday, and I was there, you know, visiting, meeting a lot of people that I actually hadn't met, because I hadn't met her side of the family. But one interesting thing that happened, it was interesting, too, because so many people have heard of me. I guess in the family it was so unusual, even on the brother's wife's side, and they wanted to meet me. But a very unusual thing happened, which was kind of interesting, is that somehow or other, and the way that Krishna works, the way that God works, somehow or other, you know, the family was looking when she was going through this. It's been 4.5 years. They're looking for some bonding, you know, something transcendent to that situation that is temporal, the relationships in terms of the body. And generally people take shelter in a type of love. It's some sense that goes beyond the body. And we do feel that ultimately love, pure love, based on this, is based on a spiritual entity. That's what we are. But somehow, you know, what happened was interesting is someone told them that the symbol of the elephant was auspicious to remove obstacles. And of course, they didn't know that that meant Ganesh, the Hindu elephant god. But somehow or other, my brother, his wife, and their two daughters, they took shelter of this symbol of the elephant. And it almost shows you the necessity for rituals, the necessity for something that points to something higher than yourself. So what happened is for her birthday, my brother and the two daughters gave her a gift certificate for the whole family to go together and get a tattoo of an elephant. Small little tattoos, you know, and, you know, they're Jewish, and generally it's for some reason or other, you're not supposed to get tattoos, and somehow you're supposed, not even supposed to be buried in a Jewish cemetery if you have a tattoo. I don't know that. So what happened was interesting. So they all got these tattoos, and then everyone started to support them by getting them elephants. So the time I wound up at their house after the funeral, there was all kinds of posters of Ganesh. There was even a stuffed animal Ganesh. And there were like 50 elephant symbols around. So, and then, you know, there was really, as they say, there are no atheists in foxholes. You know, my brother is an agnostic. The search and yearning to spirituality was there. So what happened is that I happened to be speaking and doing kirtan at the six-hour kirtan at the Broome Street Temple, which happens to be a Ganesh temple. So it wound up that many of the relatives wanted to go to honor my sister-in-law to the temple of the Hindu elephant god. So it's really interesting yesterday. My two nieces came, my brother's niece, their friends, my brother's friends, you know, and they all came to the kirtan and the lecture, and they stayed from 6:30 to, you know, about 11 at night, 10 alive, right till the end, chanting and taking prasadam and talking with the devotees and, so anyway, and then I didn't get back till very, very late because getting back to New Jersey. Anyway, let's get back to that. But it was a very interesting week and how many people were interested in spiritual subjects. One second here. I mean, maybe that's why I'm a little bit disjointed because wasn't much sleep last night. Okay, here we go. So we're in this story, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the devotees are coming to see Lord Chaitanya, who himself is Krishna coming as a devotee to experience the sentiments of his devotee, realizing that the highest pleasure is not to be loved, but to love. So in that sense, the devotee is enjoying higher than God. And then we're following Chaitanya's journey to attain this love. And it's the path we're following. So it's extremely relevant to us. So he's coming to the holy place, Puri, to work on that, to practice that. And he's, and now we're following specifically how one devotee comes to visit him, who will be instrumental in his mission, called Srila Rupa Goswami, because what Lord Chaitanya wants to experience is rasa. Bhakti Rasa, and in the Gaudiya Vaishnava conception, we discussed this many, many times, that the ultimate reality, the perfectional state, the perfectional consciousness, is an overwhelming aesthetic experience. Aesthetic experience is the only translation I can give to rasa. Rasa means aesthetic experience. And aesthetic experience means becoming overwhelmed by a particular emotion, whether it's tragedy or humor or chivalry or horror, or, you know, we know what aesthetic experience is, and how literature and poems and whatever they try to communicate that make you feel that. Well, the conception here is that the ultimate reality is bhakti rasa, is love of Godhead. And one of the ways in which you bring that experience into your heart is by hearing the pastimes of Krishna, the relationship between God and his devotees, which is an experience, an overwhelming experience of devotion. And when it is composed, not only appropriately, but when it's composed perfectly, then listening to that communicates, is the best way to communicate that mood to you. So the person who will take the pastimes of Krishna, which is described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which exemplifies this perfectional consciousness of overwhelming love, which is the goal of someone on the path of bhakti. The one who actually realizes that the Bhagavatam perfectly exemplifies this experience of the ultimate reality, that Radha and Krishna and all these pastimes are not just some kind of mythological thing, but they're a perfect description and a perfect aesthetic, a perfect description and media, via media, to communicate what we are to be achieved as Rupa Goswami. And therefore, in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he becomes a very key person, and he's empowered to express this in his wonderful poetry. And the part we're up here is Lord Chaitanya is so impressed when he hears his poetry. Not only impressed that he's hearing his poetry, he's impressed that he hears his poetry, not just because of his poetic skills, but the depth of realization he has about what Lord Chaitanya is experiencing and wants to experience, which is this intense experience of love of Godhead in the most deep and intimate way in relationship to Krishna. The sentiments of Radharani, the sentiments of Sri Radha at her height of that experience of love, that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is hankering for. And this is the essence of bhakti. The essence of bhakti is hankering. Hankering. I want that experience. It begins with a goal. Practice begins with a goal. The definition of sadhana is the utilization of your body and senses for this goal of bhava, this goal of a particular mood of devotion in one's heart that's perfect and appropriate. So Lord Chaitanya, God coming as his devotee, is hankering for this experience. And not many people know that that's the inner depth of his heart. But Rupa Goswami understands this because of the trust that Lord Chaitanya has him, because of the expression of devotion and service by Rupa Goswami in his attitude of humble service. This is so key. I'm repeating it again, but it's really the key. Advancing in bhakti means to have the heart of Krishna and his pure devotees, to have the heart of the pure souls who want to serve. So Rupa Goswami has the heart of Lord Chaitanya. He has the heart of Lord Chaitanya because Lord Chaitanya trusts him. Why does he trust him? Because he has no other desire than to serve Lord Chaitanya. And that desire to serve without any tinge of any exploitation is expressed in his humility and his service. When you're in relationship to someone, to the extent that their ego comes to the forefront is to the extent that you will not share their hearts with them, and is to the extent that they will not be able to serve you. I even saw that, how this kind of works, you know. My older brother couldn't come yesterday. He was supposed to come. But if my older brother came, I was checking in my consciousness. You know, he doesn't really understand. He respects me as a devotee. He really doesn't understand me as a devotee. He never saw me in a class open my heart to the sentiments I have. And I was wondering, when I am speaking, to what extent would I be inhibited in expressing myself fully, knowing that he may not have the frame of reference or understanding of me in that way. And then it really made me just reflect on devotional relationships. You know, when you're in a deep relationship with advanced spiritual persons, to what extent are they inhibited to reveal their heart to you because you may not have an understanding of that heart, and that you may not have the full trust and faith . So, the part that Lord Chaitanya is so impressed with his poetry, that he brings all of his most intimate associates to hear this wonderful poetry of Rupa Goswami. And now one of those associates, Ramananda Roy, has inquired, what kind of drama are you writing? He's writing this drama to express the deepest sentiments of devotion, the highest revelation of the absolute reality. And Ramananda Roy himself is a person of that caliber, a person of that knowledge. Now what will happen in the pastime? He's going to ask very detailed questions about that, how that drama is composed. Because Rupa Goswami composed dramas according to classic Sanskrit poetics. He says we can understand that it's a dantara pani, it's a mind of conclusive statements. Now, before I get on with that, I just want to reiterate one really deep theme that's being expressed by these in this pastime. Whenever you discuss the highest sentiments of love, you have to discuss the limits, not the limits, the depth of humility, because that's the foundation of love. There's a depth of humility. And that depth of humility comes, or it begins, with an understanding of something greater than yourself that invokes within you a desire to serve something greater than yourself. I just remember when I went up, the first time I went up to the Himalayas, and I saw the breadth of the depth and breadth of height. I'd be driving down these windy roads, and I would just stop the bus. I was leading a party of people. We just get out and look at, I mean, it's something amazing. The Himalayas, they're not just, I'm even now visualizing my mind, they're not just high, they're very deep. They go back farther, and there's valleys of flowers, and it's just, it's so awe-inspiring. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, of the mountains, I am the Himalayas. So what happens is, initially, when you experience the bhuti, when you experience the power of God, Bhagavad Gita says, you know, Krishna lists all the powerful vibhutis, all the powerful things. And he says that, you know, there's just a drop, a spark of my splendor. And what happens is, as I remember there, I was overwhelmed looking at the Himalayas with the glory and greatness of the divine and basking in my own relative insignificance. That's humility. It's a connection with something greater than yourself that is so glorious that you become happy in relationship to that object of majesty and glory or sweetness, in a way that you're able to embrace yourself. As dependent, in a mood of love, and it's such a joyous feeling. That's the entrance into bhakti. Spiritual life is about dissolving the ego, the sense of false independence, the desire not to be the part of something greater, but to be independent and have a relationship of lordship and control in relationship to the environment. For one's own selfish enjoyment. So when you enter into these texts, it's imbued with that happiness of relationship to something much greater than oneself. I sometimes describe it as the happiness of a child in complete dependence on the mother. In complete understanding that I am dependent on my mother, and I have relationship with my mother, and I am sheltered by my mother, and I love my mother, and I'm happy in that feeling. You know, one time I went to see one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. He was in his 90s. And he heard that some of us were delving into trying to understand Raghunuga Bhakti, the highest sentiments of spontaneous love between Krishna and the gopis. Anyway, somehow he had this idea. And he was a very kind of emotional, spontaneous person. So I just came into his temple in Vrindavan to pay respects. And then he looked at me, and he looked at my friend, and he said, "So you want to understand Raghunuga Bhakti?" Then he started to indicate, I don't know, he had some idea of abortion in the West, but he said, in the West, you don't even understand the love of a child to their mother. And then he began to cry. And then he was crying, and he was telling this story of this man in Calcutta, he understood, he knew, who was 75 years old. And this man had children, he had 10 children. And 100, you know, like, I don't know, 10 children and 50 grandchildren. And he had several factories. And he had 1,000 people working for him. But he would only take, and then he began to cry. He said he would only take food from the hand of his 95-year-old mother. He was such a controller. He had so much power. But that relationship of shelter and dependence, that he could not eat, that mood he was relishing. Humility is something like that. And it's the core basic feeling of devotion. Once you step out of that realm and become attached to your own vibhutis and powers, independent of God for the purpose of control, to that extent, you are separated from devotion. Just like there's opulence, like wealth. If we become attached to money, why are we attached to money? We're attached to money because it allows us to control more and therefore to enjoy more. And not only enjoy sensually or, you know, materially, but enjoy in terms of that sense that I am better than others. It's a hindrance to bhakti. Fame. Beauty. Now, we do need to satisfy our desires. But if we look at the core essence, why we should satisfy our desires, to be peaceful, to realize something higher than our desires. But even why, man or woman, so concerned with how they look in relationship to others, because they realize that the more people see us as beautiful, the more they will surrender to us, the more we will be able to control, the more we will be able to enjoy. So when you enter into the realm of bhakti and the real devotees, they don't have that desire to control. Because they don't want to enjoy selfishly. They want to just serve that absolute reality with their heart, with their soul. That's their mood in their heart. And therefore, they're not seeking to be praised. They're not easily insulted. They don't act expedient and try to control or manipulate. Or to become the center, or to express their abilities in such a way that others can be impressed. And when one has that core feeling in their heart of this kind of absolute, this dependence, it's not just a psychological condition. It's understanding that we are dependent. And this is intricately entwined with devotional sentiments. They can't be born of ego. To the extent we have that, is to the extent the spirit of service love is captured. Because after all, it is a consciousness. And when one has that consciousness, one has tapped into the flow of divine love. One has entered into that ultimate reality, which is only covered from us by ourselves. It's just like no matter how powerful the sun is, if you have an umbrella, then you can block the sun. It's not that the sun is less powerful. So we only block the feeling of entrance into that ultimate reality, of that aesthetic experience of bhakti and devotion, by our ego. And spiritual texts are singly concerned with dissolving the ego. But in a practical way, that's the goal. But how do you proceed towards there in a practical way? Well, one of the ways, classically, that was done was by rasa, by the aesthetic experience, even not just bhakti, but any quality dramatic performance, according to classical aestheticians, what drama would do is it would communicate this powerful experience. But the difference between the experience that the audience has and the experience of that same emotion by the person whom the drama is about is that when you experience it as an audience, this was the classical theory, you would have an overwhelming experience, but it would be devoid from your ego because it wasn't about you. So you'd have experience without ego. They would feel that, oh, this is a transcendent experience. Anyway, we'll go on and speak a few more minutes. So Srupa Damodar replied for Srila Rupa Goswami, because Rupa Goswami, this is the point, he was so shy that he could not talk about himself. It's a psychology that he had. It's such an utter humility. And there's different types of personalities. We discussed that before, that another person, and just as pure, may be able to talk about in the relationship to service what they've done. They may be able to act bold. They may be able to take the center, but in a way that they are not deluded about their own control and power. They understand how dependent they are in anything they do on the instruments that God gives one, both in terms of their mind and their senses and the inspiration to use it. They don't appropriate this, that this is me and my power alone. The Rupa Goswami's psychology and his nature was he couldn't even touch the expression of his own abilities, even though they were so substantial. And when he would touch it, he'd become overwhelmed with the sense of the glory of God, the authority of God, the right of God. The rights belong with the whole and not the part. The right of the part is to serve the whole. The authority remains with the whole. So he would become so overwhelmed with his samskaras, the impressions in his consciousness of the realization and the glory of the greatness of God's majesty and sweetness. And his own lack of independent authority outside of that majesty and sweetness, that would become so overwhelming and so powerful in his heart that he could not speak. He could not step forward. So he's asked about the drama. Sri Damodar has to reply to him. He said he wanted to compose a drama about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. He planned to describe in one book both the pastimes of Vrindavan and those of Dwarka and Mathura. He began it in that way, but now, following the order of Sri Chaitanya, he's divided into two and is writing two plays, one concentrating on the pastimes of Mathura, and the other the pastimes of Vrindavan. The two plays are called the Dugdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, both of them wonderfully describe ecstatic emotional love of Godhead. So again, this is going back. We studied this before. He was writing one play, and then he gets this revelation, the dream, which is later confirmed by Lord Chaitanya, that the concept of Krishna, the concept of the fullest revelation of the heart of God, means Krishna in Vrindavan. The place where God sheds his majesty fully and therefore can express himself fully. And when God has that desire to fully express himself, simultaneously is manifest the environment, the beauty, the rural, sweet setting of Vrindavan to facilitate. So it's one and the same thing. The desire for God to reveal himself fully and the environment that is associated and supports that type of mood. So he was writing the story of Krishna, and then Krishna leaves Vrindavan. But now he's to write two dramas to clearly delineate this point, that the fullest revelation of God, Krishna, means Krishna in Vrindavan. And as soon as he goes outside of Vrindavan to become a king, with majesty and subjects, the veil of that majesty and opulence covers more intimate revelation of the heart of God. And this point is very substantial and very important in understanding ultimately Gaudiya Vaishnava. That Gaudiya Vaishnava is a means to hanker for an intimate relationship with God, which by definition must be devoid of majesty. Because as soon as there's superiority, there is not intimacy. As soon as there's superiority, there is not full revelation of oneself. So Gaudiya Vaishnavism, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to taste and came to give, is the intimate side of God. It's the intimate side of God. That's Krishna. That's Vrindavan. So he divides these plays into two, and in the purport it's very interesting that there is 27 years between his completion of the Dagdamadava and his completion of Lalitamadava. So 27 years. The depth of consciousness, there's no computers. You get a one-shot thing, you know, a kind of feather. What is it called? The shaft of the feather. And out of some flowers, you make some ink. And you get some bark of trees or whatever it is, parchment. And it's all done in your mind. So maybe he would meditate for a month or 2 months on just one verse in his mind, composed perfectly with so many requirements for perfection in composition and understanding. And what will happen now is we'll be going over the drama. And I'm going to stop here, but first I'll just go ahead. There's something in the drama that's called the Nandi Shloka. It's going to be defined later. It's how a drama should appropriately be expressed. And a lot of times the expression of the introductory verse has to express the kind of season or setting of the drama in such a way that invokes the theme of the drama. I can't pronounce the Sanskrit, but it's beautiful. But Shudanam Chandinamati Madarimon Ma Dhamani Dhana Radhidapanaya Anasarai Sarabitam. Anyway, it's beautiful. I just butchered it. Sorry. But just listen to the, it's in Sanskrit, it's inconceivable, but just listen to the beauty of this, the introductory shloka. May the pastimes of Sri Krishna reduce the miseries existing in the material world and nullify all unwanted desires. The pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are like shikamini, a blend of yogurt and sugar candy. They overpower the pride of even the nectar produced on the moon, for they distribute the sweet fragrance of the concentrating loving affairs of Sri Mati Radharani and the Gopis. Anyway, we'll discuss this next week. Any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bogal.
I have some love questions. Okay. You were saying earlier that you were saying the necessity for humility and to recognize the superiority, actually, how much greater your beloved is in order to have love.
Say it again. Say it again quickly. Say it again.
Yes.
Yeah.
You were saying that humility is critical in order to experience love.
Yeah.
You have to, and you know, to want to serve, you have to recognize your beloved's superiority. Otherwise that love, loving feelings.
Right.
But at the same time, you're also saying that the sense of superiority in another can inhibit intimacy. So
I got the question. Yeah. The thing is, I said majesty or sweetness. Just like you may be superior to the child, right? But, you know, the beauty of the child, right? The love of the child, the sweetness of the child. There's a desire to serve that, not to control that. You may have a position of superiority, and your love may even be expressed in a way that I am your maintainer, and I am. But your conception or idea is that you're entering their world. Their desire becomes prominent. The world is under their authority. It's hot. Let me open the window for the child, even if I am cold. But, you know, the child is hungry. Let me cook what the child wants. I'll see the kitchen in relation to their desires. So actually what happens is, even if you're the mother and you're in a superior position, then the world becomes the child, and you're in the world of the child. So there's a sense of humility in that. And anytime there's love. So therefore I said it may be majesty, that actually the person is so powerful and great, I want to be in their world. Or it could be the child is so sweet and loving, I want to be in the world. So you may be even Mother Yasoda, but you're living in Krishna's world.
And so,
that's humility.
So the fact that your beloved, you're in the world of your beloved, is the superiority in that sense.
That's superiority.
Okay.
That's the superiority. The superiority is the authority. I've given up my own authority, that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. No, in love you're not. In love you're not. You're surrendered to the desire of your beloved, and the world becomes theirs.
And the time when this, that
and,
sense
and the
of
point
this,
and the point is that's humility.
Yeah.
That's humility.
Yeah, but
and then it goes further. It's further is that person becomes my life. That's my life. My life is that person. And without that person, I have no life. And therefore, in separation from that person, one feels very, very worthless. Worthless. That's my life. How much more humble can that be? That's my life. And without that person, I have no value. There's nothing intrinsically valuable about myself outside of that person and my relationship to that person. I'm tormented in separation. I have no power. I have no good. That's humility. Feeling humility means what? Unqualified. In other words, you develop a dependency, whether you develop a dependency on your needs or whether you develop a dependency on a person's love, your intrinsic value is connected. Your intrinsic abilities are connected. Your intrinsic life is connected to that person. So you feel unqualified, independently. Okay?
Yeah, and then... you also said that the highest pleasure is to love, not to be loved.
Yeah.
Right. But my only, I understand that, but at the same time, you know, I kind of feel like they're a little bit on the same level to the extent that, you know, I feel like to in order to experience that highest pleasure of loving, don't you have to feel loved by the beloved? Otherwise, you won't experience that.
I think we've discussed that many, many times. You know, you're in a relationship. A relationship means love is going both ways. So they're both the same energy. So in one sense, it's the same experience. But the selflessness, which is the core of love that comes from loving, makes it a little bit more intense than the feelings of love one feels from another, because it's at the core of selflessness. So even though it's the same energy enjoyed from both sides, still the mother enjoys motherly love more than the child, who's the object of that love. Okay, Gail?
Yes, okay, thank you.
Anyone else like to ask a question and say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Vrajaraden.
Thank you. I'd love to hear these wonderful voices out there. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Is that Henry?
Yes, Maharaj.
Where are you, Henry?
I'm back home in Washington.
Okay, right. I'm going there the week after next, and unfortunately, I will miss you. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, somehow I gave this class, very frankly. I mean, I was up so late last night, driving back from the city, you know, past midnight, which is unusual for me. So I didn't have the same resource of sadhana to call upon before I gave the class. But next week I shall be well rested. Thank you very much, Richard.